In the world of Heksher Kelim, specifically in the world of Hagala, is that Kibbalah Kachpalta is a very central topic. Over the last couple of weeks, we had a chance to begin to unpack it. Let's remember a little bit where we've been, and I want to take a look at a central practical question that Tosfos asks that begins to tie all the Halacha and Maisa together. We saw between the Gemara and the Gemara and Pesachim, Aflam and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Ayin Hei, and Vav. The principle of Kibbalah Kachpalto is already expressed by the Mishnah Ayin Hei, in terms of Hagala and Liban. We saw the Gemara has unpacked it more. The Gemara has unpacked it also in terms of not only within Hagala, different varieties of Hagala, Klirishin versus Iri versus Klisheni. The Riff had already formulated that. And we saw that in trying to work out the Psachim Daf Lamed, the Gemara there comes to the conclusion that the kasher or knife requires Hagala. I raise the possibility of Liban, of encase and protect the handle and do Liban. The Gemara says, Lamaskana, Hilchasa, you only need Hagala. Tosfos raises the possibility, even Rashi who said Liban, maybe he himself is saying, it's just a Chumra, but Hilchasa, you only need Hagala. Whatever it is, wherever Rashi falls, which is material, but wherever Rashi falls, Lamaisa Maskana is you need Hagala. Tosfos raises a problem, but elsewhere we talk about Liban. So Tosfos and Rabban had debated what the answer would be. Tosfos had raised the distinction of Hetera Bala, and the Rabban raised the issue of Rov Tashmisha. Tosfos raised the issue of maybe Zdafka by Pesach, where we say Hagala suffices because of Sugi and Avodah Zarah and Vav, that when there's Hetera Bala, Hagala is always fine. Even though it's a Tashmisha Ba'ur, being maklish, as we had seen, we showed the Chachmei Svar, it said, being maklish, the Tambalua through Hagala suffices to ward off any new Isser forming. And Tosfos thinks that Chametz Kol Pesach is a Terabala, so Mimela do Hagala Kovim HaPesach when it's still Hatera and you're good to go. The Rabban, it says, I didn't think so. Rabban's of the opinion that Chametz Kovim HaPesach is Yisurabal because Chametz Shemo Alav. So the Ran quote that from the Ramban, that you already have the status. The classic Hatera ball is no sir. So before the carbon reaches the expiration, it's not no sir whatsoever. Here it is Chametz. Chametz isn't yet usher to eat outside of the Beis HaMikdash, inside the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Rav understood it. Chametz Shmolav, because it is all year long practical halacha l'maisa nafkamina, not outside the Mikdash, but the halachic status of Chametz all year long. So it's Isur Bala, but the Rabban raised the issue of Rov Tashmisha. Of Rov Tashmisha. Then last time we began to explore the world of Cheres. So that Cheres is interesting. We rooted in the Psukim. Cheres doesn't let up to Hagala, but as we saw, it appears in the Gemara also Psachim Davlam, that Cheres in principle lends itself to Liban. As we saw, the Gemara raised limiting. There is a caveat which is going to be true both for Hagala, Liban and for Hagala, is that we don't allow you to kasher in ways that we suspect you won't let the kashering process go through because it's going to get ruined. So Gemara raises that in terms of Liban, to do Liban on the Kli Cheres, if it's not meant for that type of heat, and you're doing it in a reversible fashion, it's inappropriate. That's what the Gemara said. To do Liban on the oven, it's fine, because that's what you always do with the oven. You always fire it up. So you can fire up to kasher galik. We have a pot which is meant for the heat, hit the heat from the heat to hit from the outside. You're gonna put the heat on the inside. That's so we're worried you're gonna draw it out of the heat too quickly. If you fill it with coals, so that's one version. So that is what it is. We're not worried about it's not really so reversible, but you're holding it in the fire, you may pull it out too quickly. It should be noted that in terms of that point, the Shulchan Aruch and Tafnun Aleph has examples of that. I think you mentioned outside, it's worth seeing. Shulchan Aruch already has examples of that when it comes to Haga'olah also. That principle from Psachim Daf Lamed with the Buchya, Shulchan Aruch says, they're unkashrable kalim. Shulchan Aruch Tafin Aleph says you have a kli made out of horn, a kli made out of keren. So we're hesitant about whether or not you can kasher it, because Tafnun Aleph says Zayin Yesh Mishaomer Kapos Asuris Mikeren In Lem Takana Bagala. Sometimes I guess whittle spoons out of horn. So Shulchan says it's very nice, but if once it gets treif, you're done. Because why? Kevishim is kalkulim mayim chamin chayshin dim lachayis alayim. We're worried. Same concern. Dim lachayis. Even though you're going to kasha them, we're worried that you're going to pull it out. And then Magen Avraham gives more examples. Let's say there's a horn handle, or let's say it's made with glue. He gives some name. Oif kishugu. So that's a real issue that we spoke about last time in terms of non-dishwasher safe plastic. It's going to be the same thing. So that dishwasher safe is relevant in that way. So those are some of the principles of the different application of Kabbalah Kachpolto in the large and finer adjustments, and the fact that the finer adjustment may or may not machlokas Tosis Ramban. To what extent does Rov Tashmisho play a role, which we want to come back and explore a little more, and to what extent is it limited by a Terbo, and this question of Charis. But now we start to break down some Maisa, what's Haggalah actually going to look like, and that brings us to Tosis and Avodah Zarah, who asks, Tosis has raised this issue in a couple of places, tried to put a few of them in the Maramu Kamos. Tosus raises in Avodah Zarah, Tosus raises in Chulin. The Rosh talks about somewhat rather extensively in Psachim. And that's the question of how do you actually imagine Haggalah working? As we pointed out last time, one of the differences we showed and pointed out between Haggalah and Libun is that Libun is not a extraction process. Libun is a destruction process. It's incineration. But when you do Haggalah, you're extracting. That's why Tosis in the... You have the long Tosis here. At the top of the first Tosis, the longer Tosis, I above Amar Aleph, Bas Yoma. So in learning Bas Bechala, we had spent time in the Tosis, the first part of the Tosis. Because Tosis raised the issue of how you define Eina Ben Yom. Again, the Gemara had raised the issue of... let's say you didn't kasher. What's the story? The Bava Vayin Hayim Beis. What's the story if you didn't kasher? Chulon Shashash Ben, four lines from the Bava Shul Yapil Yagel Shul Yilavin. Let's say you didn't kasher. Tani Chadas or Tani Idach Muta. Two different brises debate if you used a tray for kli without kashering, does it make the food tray for not? So what's the issue? So the Gemara says, it may be a halachic issue. It may be a halachic issue. And what's a halachic issue? Halachic issue is, look, the kli is no stam lefgam. The kli is no stam lefgam. The flavor that's emerging from this, you bought this soup ladle from a nachri at a yard sale. The nachri mistami used that soup ladle for clam chowder, and now you're using it for your Shabbos stick of chicken soup. So the tom clam is going into the soup. So that's a nosen tom lefgam. No tam lufgam, it's a net negative. So does that make treif? Does not make treif. So the Gemara says, we assume we assume that it does not make treif. That no stam of gam is mutter. And again, it doesn't mean that the clam chowder is nifsal me'afila, but it means that the change that whatever little bits of tam come out into the soup is going to reduce the quality of the taste of the soup instead of improving it. It'd be a net negative. So I said that the Gemara says, and here's a key point. Amanda Omar two lines to the bomb. One second, if it doesn't make treif, so then what? How do you understand pshat in the pesukim matos? You have to kasher. In other words, and now put in the context of what we spoke about last week, the pesukim in Sava are giving the mitzvah kashering the clay mikdash. We say it's not just about being matos. That's a mitzvah. That's what has to dafka be in the mikdash, like the laundering the kela, the clothing. They got some spritz of dam chatas. That says davka has to be in the mikdash, and that's why it's not in marika but shtifa. You have a cold water rinse as well, because it's a mitzvah. But the begiula klei nachem parshas matzahs, we don't assume that's a mitzvah. You make a bracha. It's just a matir, like removing gedanasha. There's no mitzvah to remove gedanasha. You want to eat the meat, you gotta get the gedanasha out first. You want to use the kalim, you gotta get the tam out first. So if it doesn't make a difference, it doesn't make a difference. So how do you say the psukim in chumash? I didn't daraisa. So that's what the Gemara says. Well, lo asra Torah el kedera bas yoma, dilav nos tam lufgamu. That we assume that in the first 24 hours, when it's a bas yoma, within the first day, it's nos tam lushrach. Beyond that, it's nos tam lufgam, and become ve'eluk lushtari. So then, why do you have to do the hagola at all? On a clean zayin of yom, but it says you're right. That's a din drabba. Kedera shem bas yoma shum kedera. Bas Yom. That's how we assume la halacha. We assume la halacha that when it's a ben yomo, so the time that comes out is the time of shvach, and that's the only context that the chumash was talking about. Chumash had a din d'oraisa of agala on a ben yomo. Ain't a ben yomo. That's not what the pasuk is talking about. The pasuk is that's a din d'rabanan, because people, why do people? If we told you you buy a kli from an achri, leave it 24 hours, then you can use it. So then there'd be rampant confusion and chaos, and people end up using kain which are b'nei yomim as well. So in order to avoid the problem, the raisa, of people using kain b'nei yomim, which do create a problem, so they said, even a lot of b'nei yomim, midrabban, you have to kasher as well. That's the Gemara. And that raises a question with Tosis, the one second. So one question Tosis raises, the opening question is a shayla, not a kasha, which is how exactly do you define ben yomo? How does Ray jump to the conclusion that means 24 hours? The Tosis says a machlokas by Tosis. Does this mean 24 hours? It means literally overnight. Linus life. Then Tosis raises the question later on, Rabbeinu Baruch. No, sorry. What's pregnant in the first Tosis and explicit in the next Tosis? Is how does kashering ever work? How does kashering ever work? I understand. Tosa says in the second wide line, Hagolas clay kli ben yoma im lahagel ela bishishim. The shamnunas hanifla tachamin tam lashvachu. Based on what the Sukkah here says, that we assume that during the first 24 hours of tam lashvach. So how are you kashering? What do you mean? This is the tam lashvach. So then the flavor makes the water treif, and then the flavor goes back into the kli. So you haven't solved anything. The Tosa says here, very bekitzer, well, either needs to be, if it's a ben yomo, it better be batel b'shishim. If it's a thin pot with a lot of volume, a tremendous amount of water, 60 times as much water as the volume of the pot walls, so whatever flavor comes out of the pot, goes into water, bolts the bashishim, and then it's not going to impact. It's not going to re-impact. So Tosis here says a very bekitzur, very halacha maisa. This Tosis is in halacha maisa mode. Tosis, as you saw, if you saw the long Tosis in Chulin, and the Rosh and Sachem and Tosis elsewhere, raises is more of a kasha. And they built it out from the sugya. So I don't understand. What does it mean to kasha? What does it mean to kasha? What does it mean to kasha? But how does kashin work? But it's just going to go right back in. Now, the obvious answer is oh, Eina ben Yomo. Eina ben Yomo, the ladle wouldn't make my chicken soup trafe if the ladle's Eina ben Yomo. So it's also, it's not going to make the water trafe. And now when the flavor comes back into the ladle, even though it's the same flavor that was there moments ago, but now it's tchilas hatam lefgam. It's not tchilas hatam leshvach. When it originally came into the ladle, it was leshvach. It became nifgam, we say, remains awesome. But
it's just weird because manavshat. If it's not the only reason, it's only midorabanan that we require a. So it's just like it's a nothing.
No one. It seems like it almost feels like Monte Carlo. And here's the problem. You can't say that Haggalah, the efficacy of Haggalah, is built in a benyomo because, as the Gemara here points out, Haggalah Daraisa is by a benyomo. Exactly. Any benyomo, the need for Haggalah is only Drabanan. But there is a parasha of Haggalah in the Chumash. So the question is, as the Tosfos presses out, so what's the Chumash talking about? The Chumash says it's a Haggalah by a benyomo. So how does that work?
Greater than Shisha.
Right, so one answer is, well, okay, so maybe the Chumash is only talking about a case where you could have shishim. Okay?
Shishim of the water.
That there'll be shishim in the water connected to the volume of the pot wall. Which either means, again, going back to the sugi we had seen, the bottom line involvement of, either you kasher or yor katan pesochi or gadolo. Right? And I have a ladle, I have a cup, I'm going to put it into a much larger pot. Okay, the hachamai, that means we're making a nukimta that we're talking about, the Torah is talking about small kelim. The alternative is, as the Gemara had said, yor gadol, you could also kasher a pot in itself with a gedanfa. Right? I'm going to have to create spillover somehow. But once again, that means you're talking about a pot that whose walls are relatively thin. Thin enough that the volume of the contents are six times as much as the volume of the pot wall itself. Nowadays, it's much more common because of the technology that we have. Most pots tend to have very thin walls. Once upon a time, even a century ago probably, that was not necessarily the case. And it's going to come by, we discussed in Baz Pachav, it's going to come by all the time, even in terms of you accidentally use a tray for pot to make the soup. So now what's the status of the soup? So bismanas, that's much more common. If you have a full pot of soup, it's going to be, you'll have shishim in the soup against the pot wall. Once upon a time, that was not as common, because once upon a time, most pots were probably like a cast iron type thickness. So from a Haggalah perspective, so it means that we're saying the whole parish of Haggalah is very limited. Haggalah is common midrabanan because once you get into any benyomo territory, so you can kasher anything because we're not worried about the tom cycling into water then back into the kli. But those cases don't exist on the level of dais. Those cases military you don't need anything. The whole institution of Haggalah is limited. So elsewhere, Tosis does have other solutions. In fact, you look in the Encyclopedia Talmudis article on Haggalah Skelim, they pick apart many different versions of what Tosis says in different places into a total of 8 possible terutzim to this kasha. A number of the other terutzim are variations what Tosis says in Chulin that maybe there's a reason why the flavor kushime karalesa, when you kasher something, you aren't going to physically have the flavor going out into liquid and then right back into the pot. Why? So sometimes some Rishonim say, well, maybe, you know, whatever just came out doesn't go back in. The Baal Tosfos is very bothered by that. Well, it's like a little Maxwell's demon. He says, well, this flavor just came from the pot, so it doesn't go back. But that flavor, Again, if I make, if I have a power of a pot and make chicken soup in it, so the flavor of the chicken soup is going into the power of a pot. So how come, but the flavor that was already in the pot goes out and doesn't come back in? How does the pot now have the chachma and the seichel to know what's a nubli and obli? So that Tosis is very skeptical about. Another variation of that, which Tosis and Chulin raises based on the sugya there, is... it's, well, maybe it has to do with the Gemara that raises the notion that Kolzman things are boiling, you're not going to have as much blia. That comes up in terms of the Sugya of Tipas Chalav. That maybe more blia happens once the boiling cools down. So that's what Tosas said. There were Rishonim who were Machmir, that if you, when you kasher a Ben Yomo, you better make sure you pull it out of the hug. Don't just turn off the water and let everything simmer down, because then all of a sudden the blias are going to move around more. So Bali Tosas have a number of such solutions. Halacha lamasa, we really accept what Tosas says here in Avodah Zarah. Lamasa, we don't rely on any of the other cheshbonos that, well, because it's boiling, the flavor is not going back, or because it's a new flavor, it's not going to bounce back and forth. We assume that the solution is Eina Ben Yomo Rosh Hashanah.
Or Liban
never requires it. Liban is an issue because it's not going out and coming back in; it's being incinerated. But when you're dealing with Hagala in a Hanami, if you're dealing with a Hagala Daraisa, we do require Shishim in a Hanami. Okay, so maybe that's what the pasuk was talking about. Yil Kasher. It's difficult in terms of the psukim, this approach, because it's making a little kimta in the pasuk, as it were. Only certain kelim lend themselves to Hagal Daraisa. Okay. But the Bayatosas find it more attractive, even though it's a little bit dachuk in terms of how you read the psukim, but it's smooth in terms of svara. Instead of coming up with these hamtsaos of why it is that the flavor isn't going to go back, no, we are worried about the flavor. In Achanami, the Torah, Psukim Torah case, where you have the shishim to catch you, and then Bizman Hazeh, once you deal with Ein Ben Yomo, if you let it be an Ein Ben Yomo, then you always have a solution. Because once it's Ein Ben Yomo, then I'm not worried about it bouncing back and forth. Yeah.
Without Ein Ben Yomo, it's much more relevant the kli that you're totally into. Right, like meaning, if you have a fork that you want to be fleishik, whether you're using a dairy or like pot, would that make a difference? Because the status of the water, and for Pesach also would be relevant. Meaning,
right? So we assume that we generally will use a kashering pot, which is either what you want the kli to become. As I'm kashering the kli from chametz to Pesach, so I'll use the Pesach to kasher pot. I'm kashering a kli from treif to fleishik. And I have a fleishik fork that fell into milchus became treif, or fell into treif of food and became treif. I want it to be back to fleishik. So usually either the pot that you're kashering is the target, it's Pesach dik or it's fleishik, or else the pot that you're using is Eina Ben Yomo. There are those that have the practice to kasher the kashering pot first, is not
but
to rely on the pot
being
in the yom.
Right,
so that's Alpi Pashtas, we assume.
That's only,
unless you have that particular minute. Yeah, that's a chum. Okay, then you can kasher. There's Me'ikar Adin, we assume that you could kasher Eina Ben Yomo Chametzdika forks in an Eina Ben Yomo Chametzdika pot. Practically speaking, we don't usually do it because usually you're kashering because you need somewhere for your fork to go after it's kashered. So practically speaking, when you're kashering a kitchen for Pesach, so usually you want the surfaces to be kasher for Pesach before you kasher kelim, because where you're the fork and the becher are going to come out of the kasher pot, you want to be able to put them down on the Pesachtik countertop, or as we're going to discuss actually in momentosis, in the Pesachtik sink. So usually what that means is you want to already have, you're using the the Yorah Gedola of kashering, you know, loose kalim, whatever it is that you're kashering, the items you're kashering, usually practically speaking, you do that after the hardware. The real estate of your kitchen was flipped over to Pesach. So usually that means the countertops are Pesach Dik, and the sink is Pesach, and the oven is Pesach Dik. So now, Me'ikar, I think you could use a Chametz Dik pot on your Pesach Dik oven. Most people are not looking for that. So typically you're going to use your Pesach Dik pot on the Pesach Dik oven, and you filled it with water from the Pesach Dik sink, and then all the anybody know Chametz Dik things, you can't rely on Shishim. Usually we just, anybody know was by far simpler. So once it clears the Eben Yomo, the Chametz clears the Eben Yomo, then it goes into the Pesach Dik pot. But yeah, make right then. You could use Eben Yomo and Milchik Flesh also. If the clear the Eben Yomo, you don't really care. If the pot is the Eben Yomo and the clear kash is the Eben Yomo, you don't really care about Milchik Flesh. Yeah.
So Shishim was our, like, in Basra Chol, and maybe it's different here, Shishim was our, like, backup, not the best option. Really, like, it was our, like, last resort because we don't have, having the Goyish cook to taste it and this, that. But Shishim with Basra Chol was our backup option in the Gemara. Now it's our, like, primary way of how to do Haggalah, because if you didn't have Shishim, you can't get Haggalah properly. Like, it seems like we went from backup option to, like, primary option.
That's interesting. Are you saying that's Sugya and Gyan?
I mean, I thought that we said that was, like, that's where, like, Shishim came from, though, that aspect. And it's, like, the backup option. It's the last one. It's our last resort. And now it's our primary here. Or Tosis using it as our primary. Gemara doesn't mention. I mean, Tosis uses it as our primary.
Yeah. That's an interesting question.
What do you mean that it's a back? Like, when do we say it's a back?
In Basar B'Challah, we use it. It's not our primary way of how to taste whether something, to know whether something has lost its taste.
Right.
We use it as our, like, last resort. Like, if it's if it's Batal B'Shishim, then therefore it must have lost its taste. But we said that was really, like, that was the last resort of the Gemara. It was, like, the last answer.
Yeah, Eric is referencing the Gemara in Chulin Daf Tzadi Zayin, Tzadzayim Rav, Tzadzayim Beis, in the seventh Peg Yonasha. The Gemara points out that the Mishnayos don't really talk much, if at all, about Shishim. The Mishnayos tend to talk about Binos and Tam. But you have a little Tipas Chalal, fell into Basar, Chulin Kufches. So the drop of milk that falls into the pot of meatballs, does it make them treif or not? Binos and Tam. Depends if it tastes like milk or not.
Right,
you have the Giranasha, you grill the Giranasha, you grill the sirloin or whatever with the Giranasha in it. So then you have to figure out, did it give tam or not? So I said, Rav, was it Rav, I think? So it says, Amar Abana, sometimes we say Bitoim, either with a Jewish or non-Jewish taste, depending on the context. And sometimes we say Shishim. So the Gemara said, exactly as Eric said, the Gemara says, well, ideally, the Mishnahs keep talking about us in time, because ideally we want to have a taster. But if you don't have it, you don't have a Nachri chef who can taste it, or Rama says Ashkenazi practice is not to rely on a kefela at all, or you don't have anyone who's available to taste it, or your kosher and trey foods are of the same taste, so there's no way to do a sensory test. So then you shishim. Shishim is your rule of thumb. In other words, really, oftentimes, a 1 to 50 or 1 to 40, maybe 1 to 30 ratio would be enough we'll be diluted enough that the Tam Isur is not Nirgash. I can't taste the Tam Isur, and then really it's Mutter. But so if I can directly assess that, I have a Kefela, so it'd be taller than the China. If I can't directly assess it, so then 1 to 60 is always safe. If you're not dealing with flavor concentrates or spices or extracts, with normal food items, so 1 to 60 is always safe. You're saying it's ironic that the Gemara in Chulin presents Shishim as sort of like the last resort. Tosa is now saying the whole parasha of Haggalah is built on Shishim. Yeah, that is an ironic point. I would push back, though. I think it's ironic and paradoxical, but I don't think it's shver. I'll tell you why. Because the logic of Shishim is not a last resort. The logic of Shishim is fundamentally the same as the logic of Benos and Tam. It's just the different ways of, like, the logic either way is, well, things are diluted enough, there's enough, the ratio between the rov heter and the miyad iser is such that the miyad iser is not tasteable. How do I know? How do I determine that? So it can either determine the question of kfela versus shishim is merely a question of methodology, not a question of the underlying mechanism. The underlying mechanism is diluted enough that I can't taste it. It's mutter. It's bottom. How do I know that it's diluted enough? Either directly taste or else to triangulate with shishim. So, but shishim works for the same reason kfela works, that there's enough dilution that it's not giving tom. Except I didn't determine that directly, I determined it indirectly just by doing the numbers. But I would translate what you're saying into in a chanami. In other words, even if, and maybe this, the truth, I think what you're saying is important in the following way. If you translate your point back into this Tosfos, Tosfos is practically saying you need shishim. But fundamentally, I could sometimes, and as I could try kashering in Esrim or Shloshim and taste the water. So if I have a kefail around, and that already makes that I think eases some of the kash we had before. We said before, look, this approach in Tosu, we accept La Lacha, so it's strong Bisvara, because the other Shitos that Tosu didn't like, where I had all these chidushim of the, you know, fluid dynamics of Tom, it goes here, it doesn't go there, all the traffic rules. But so this is much smoother. This works according to principles that are familiar. But on the other hand, Harei it's dachak in the psukim, because it's only, you know, very small kalim, very skinny walled pots. So you're saying it doesn't have to be. The truth is, if I had a larger kli, and I didn't have, let's say I have a thicker pot, I don't have the volume of the contents versus the volume of the pot wall is not 60 to 1, it's 30 to 1, it's 20 to 1. So you're saying you could still boil it and then taste the water. And if the water doesn't taste like whatever, oysters, clams, whatever, sure. And Tosa is just saying as a rule of thumb, that it's the same rule of thumb. The same rule of thumb that we employ when in Tipas Chala falls into Vaster, strictly speaking, you could have a kefela tasted. Otherwise, your fallback is shishim. You're saying here also. So you have your pot, and you fill up with the Jewish soldier in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, in year 40 of the Midbar, he has his cast iron pot that he got from the Midyani, and he wants to kosher it, and it's a pretty thick, and he measures, says, okay, so fill it with water, and boil it, and overflow it a little bit, and then taste the water, or have a nachri taste the water, as the case may be, and you have a kefela. You have a kefela. So then you could, right? If you have a kefela, you could. If you don't have a kefela, so then you're going to have to rely on shishim. Or else wait till it's Ein Ben Yom, at which point, minat Torah, there's no need for hagala. And Rabbanon, it's easy to do hagala.
I guess Tosos here is saying that shishim is better than nosing tam. Because this is going, the Gemara is trying to answer, nosing tam of gam is, according to the Mandar, nosing tam of gam is mutter. How do you explain the pasuk? And it's saying is we're dealing with a case of it's bas yomo, which therefore it's not it's
not stam shvach.
But Tosfos saying is you could, but hagala bas yomo works, and the only way it works is shishim. Shishim is even better than tam, because if we're going based on tosing tam of gam, we would end up replying that can't be the case.
Right, but nosing tam of gam here, nosing tam of gam is not the same as benosing tam. Right. In other words, I think you're right. In a case of hagala daraisa, if there isn't shishim, you can have a kefela taste of water, but no satam.
Okay.
Right? But practically speaking, like you can bring the next door, you can bring the chef over to taste the agal water, maybe. Okay. Right. Well, maybe.
He may not want to come back.
Right. It's not so attractive. It's not so practical. But yeah, but in principle, you could. In practice, So that's in terms of the practicalities of implementing Hagalah, once I've figured out that I'm doing Hagalah and how I'm doing Hagalah, you know, what level, so the one very practical issue is, this drives the question of when. This drives the question of when. That's why we wait 24 hours for Hagalah, is because of this concern of Tosus. Again, there were other Bali Tosus who said it's not a concern because the Blia knows not to go back, or Kol Zman is boiling, at least it won't go back. But we don't accept those approaches. And we said, no, this is a real issue. This is a real issue. And you need a solution. And one solution is shishim. Okay, if you talk about shishim. Another solution is wait till say anything normal. There are two other solutions also. Tosis gives a third solution. Let's take a look. Again, here's this Tosis on Avodah Zarah in the medium width lines, the second medium width line. Hagal's clay. If it's still ben yoma, then you need shishim. Because whatever flavor is going to come into the hot water, the hagala water, if it's a ben yoma, it's a tam l'shvach. Lo sharina le'el perik beis chamin shal ov degochav v'shum k'destam kalei v'ein ben yoma. Earlier, Tosa says almost 40 blot earlier, daf lamed ches. In the second parak. He said, you get the hot water from the Nachri, you can assume it's kosher because you assume that his pot is a ben yomo. But here, if you know it is a ben yomo, so then it's not a concern. So far Tosa gave us two solutions. Shishim or a ben yomo. Then Tosa says a third solution. Kishim agilin klei chameis be'ere pesach b'dal chos. The shas heter hui, yochel ha'agil afil kli ben yomo pachas mi shishim. So not by not shall heter. Tosa says heter bala, the return of heter bala. Now it's not heter bala to Hagala versus Liban. Now it's heter bala, the other application of heter bala that there's a limited number of steps that the flavor can travel before we ignore it if it's still mutter. This is a not by not, because what's the problem? I used this frying pan last night to make matzah brei with chametz tikka matzah. Shit, you're right in the mode. You're in the zone. So you're getting warmed up. No pun intended. So you after being at chametz, you didn't have supper. You didn't have a chance to have supper before. Well, it was still light out, so you didn't have supper. Then after being at chametz, after this chametz is done, 10 o'clock at night, you sit down for supper. You made a chametz tikka supper in the frying pan. Let's leave the frying pan out. And you made chametz tikka. You had mushroom barley soup, and this was the ladle, and this was the pot, and now you want a kasher. So Taisa says, what's the problem? The tom barley went into the ladle. And now today, last night, now today you're going to stick the ladle into the kasher pot. Erev Pesach morning. So now the flavor goes into the pot, not bar not. Now it's going to go back into the ladle. It's a not bar not bar not. The hetera. So not bar not bar not, the hetera is fine. I die not call after. Givaldic. So that's option number three.
But so, the Midyanim case wasn't heterus.
Correct. This is not heterus to the. That's what he's saying. It took to talk about Klei Nachrim, you need either Shishim or Ben Yomo. But sometimes, depending on what it is, if you're kashering, let's even give a simpler case, because he mentioned as how you deal with Chametz is an interesting question. But let's say from Milchik to Parv, or from Fleshik to Parv. I had a part of a pot and a part of a ladle and it accidentally became milchik or fleshik. I want to bring it back to being part of it again. So I don't need to wait. I don't need to wait 24 hours. I don't have to worry about shishim. And then there's a fourth solution that often comes up in industrial contexts. And the OU Chuvus, they quote this from the Chazon Ish. And this is Chazon Ish's particular approach to this. Sometimes this is practically in an industrial setting. This Tosus presents a very severe implementation issue. Whereas you, at home, usually okay, so you put the fork aside, you put the knife aside. It could be it'll sit on the windowsill in the kitchen for 3 months. The halavach is we can afford for it to sit for 24 hours. But if you're coming into a catering facility. You don't necessarily get to have access to it for more than 24 hours. Yeah, you can't say, I'm going to come in on Monday afternoon, I know nothing was used, and then we're in a kosher late Tuesday evening. We don't have that time. Often you come in and you have a few hours, you have to kosher everything. So we need to have enough time to physically kosher. That's one question. You have to make sure you're doing the good things that I've spoken before. The machayis, you have to make sure you're doing a thorough job. Okay, so we'll make sure we have enough hours to... to do the koshering. But to have an additional 24 hours, you often don't have that. Or in a factory. So let's say this comes up most commonly in a canning factory, is a classic situation. Because canning factories are very interoperable. You can very easily switch over from one food to another food. Yeah, and very often smaller food producers will rent hours in a canning facility. So I'm coming in to do to can tomato sauce, but it could be 3 hours. I walk in now. I don't know who was here this morning. So it could be someone was doing clams. Entirely possible. Could be they were doing canned chicken. I don't know what they were doing. So the way canning plants typically work is they cook the food in the can after it's sealed by running it on a conveyor belt through a steam jacket or a steam system. You have this area, this enclosed area, where there's a boiler producing superheated steam, and it's sort of like those toaster ovens in cafeterias where you put the bread on and it goes through. You set the heat, then you set the speed, and it goes in the conveyor belt, and it comes out. So you put the cans through the steam jacket, and that's how they get cooked. The problem is the water keeps being recycled. It could be it's the same water that was used for the clam chowder this morning. And to cool everything down enough, you can drain the water, put in fresh water. That's getting problematic. So that's an even more severe application of what, again, often comes up with koshering. So the solution in both cases is the same. That the solution number four to the problem of how does koshering work, either shishim or enibay yomo, or hetera, or a davar apogim. That if I... What's the concern? The concern is what Tosis is concerned. That the trefa flavor is going to emerge from the pot into the water and then bounce right back into the pot. So one of the solutions Tosis had given was, well, if you wait until the pot's ein benyomo, so then when it lands in the water, it's pogum, so it doesn't make the water treif, and more importantly, when it lands back, and when it ricochets, so to speak, back into the pot, it's tchilas habliel of kam, and that's mutter. Chazal only forbade the kli ein benyomo because it was tchilas habliel shvach and it became nifkam afterwards. So there's another way to make it tchilas habliel of kam, which is put pine oil into the kashering water, put in some item that's very, very potent. Again, because we mentioned that we ideally try to avoid kashering with other fluids. We try to kasher only with water. So yeah, it put us a little bit of something that's a very potent usually an alkaline, something very bitter, or otherwise very, very, very distasteful. I think pine oil is a common option. And then when the flavor goes back in, so once it's the flavor in the water is mixed with the Davar HaPogim, so when it goes ricochets back into the kli, it's chiyas habliel of kam. So those are the four solutions. And then Tosa says one more point about the kashering process. And you might be wondering what the Hemshech HaDvarim is. Mashenogu lasos, this practice that we have, and this practice, they point out, already appears b'shem Rashi. Some of the Talmidei Rashi quote this b'shmo. Lasos kli hamugal b'mayim mitzolin imiyad achar agol. Then right after you pull the kli out of the kashering pot, you stick it into cold water. Ein leida lama nagukin. We don't know. It's hard to know why that's the practice. Why is Tosis raising that here? Not just because Tosis is working on trying to unpack the lemaisa of Hayukasher, but because this was a potential other teretz to the previous kasher.
So maybe also has to explain
Tosos L'Shitaso that where the tevila cooked, that the tevila isn't ma'akev how you kosher stuff, because the Rashba said you have to do the tevila afterwards, so you're definitely dipping it into something that's cold after you clean it.
Okay.
But Tosos has to figure out a way to prove that it doesn't really, tevila doesn't matter when you do it. So when people were washing up, they may have felt it was like more like a tevila thing. So he was like saying, "Cause I don't." Maybe that's where that came from.
Interesting.
Because I don't think it's.
It may relate to the toast in the previous summit. It may relate to toast in the previous summit. Yeah, may relate to toast in the previous summit. Interesting. And also, what's lingering again that this toastus doesn't unpack as much as the other toastus do is there were those who said that's the solution. You know how you make sure the flavor doesn't get back in? Because you pull it out right away while still boiling, and make sure to rinse it off so you won't have beads of Hagala water sitting and cooling on the pot, and then the flavor goes back in. So there were those who interpreted that that's the idea behind Minigrashi. And Tosis here is very subtly rejected. No. That's not the reason why. But Tosis either goes on to say, or at least... intimate is that maybe it may have something to do with Marika or Shtifa. They said before that the parash, one of the differences between Hagolas Klei HaMikdash, Klei Chatzis in Parashas Tzav and Klei Midyan in Parashas Matos, Hagolas Klei Mikdash is a mitzvah. One of the expressions of that is that you don't just do mriki, do shtifa as well, which the Gemara interprets in God's machlokes what those two words mean. Morak v'shutaf b'moim, and we assume it's mrika b'chamen and shtifa b'tzonim. So Tosis indicates there may be a connection. The different ways of understanding that, right? Ganak. Like, I remember guys saying this. Rabbi Shechter thought that this pshat in Tosfos is that it's a zecher l'mikdash. In other words, in mikdash, it's part of the mitzvah is not to do the hechsher in hot water, but the mitzvah involves also an added step of rinsing cold water. So we have the practice. Rashi says that we have a minig to rinse in cold water. Tosfos says it's not because otherwise the hechsher doesn't work because we're worried about the flavor getting back in. No. It's a minig. What's the minig about? Perhaps, what Tosis is driving at, is that the minig is a zeichel mikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, the mitzvah required shtifa b'tzonein, so we don't need shtifa b'tzonein. We want to make a zeichel mikdash every time we kasher. I've often thought, you know, it adds a whole other dimension. It adds a elevating dimension to making Pesach. In other words, you're kashering, like in the, especially betkufas by atosis, the main cook cleaning for Pesach wasn't cleaning the house, it was doing the Hagala. Like in the midst of all the elbow grease, suddenly, like, you're rinsing things in cold water to remember what it was like in the mikdash. So like a very elevating dimension. Okay. Now we could put the pieces together, and maybe we could put the pieces together using this.
You could say that if you buy new stuff for Pesach, you're like, let's say you're like buying new things.
Kedeis Pesach Yishaver. Interesting. Ari, I apologize.
Bring him a copy.
What?
I can bring him a copy.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy afterwards. I'm sorry I don't have something that's shareable. This flow chart lays out, I don't think we have every last detail, but I think it really pulls together in hopefully a concise and understandable way the concepts we've been talking about, the way the Shulchan Aruch lays them out. One question is, are we dealing with Cheres, or dealing with a more typical kasherable material? As you see, Cheres in general goes straight to Libun Chamer. Again, we said last time, that if you're dealing with a drabbanon, or at least with a drabbanon kal, einol yikrim ha-Torah, so then you could do some sort of enhanced hagala, three rounds of hagala. Okay, but generally speaking, cheres is only going to require libun chamer if libun chamer is even an option. Otherwise, the question then becomes tashmisho be'wat, and that's the basic question of kibbol kapolta.
Put it on the
Okay, great. Thank you. Is it Tashmish B'chamin or Tashmish B'tzoni? Tashmish B'chamin or Tashmish B'ur? So again, the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah Ayin Heim Beis had said that in principle, Tashmish B'ur is going to require Libun. However, as we saw, although the Mishnah says that and the Braisa says that Avodah Zarah Ayin Heim Beis, but the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Ayin Vav Amud Aleph limits that even if it's Tashmish B'ur, you have to ask, what type of Bliya does it have? Is it a Surah Bala or a Teir Bala? If it's Tashmish B'ur, it's Surah Bala, so then you need Libun Chamer. Or if it's Cheres, you need Libun Chamer. If it's Tashmish B'ur, but a Teir Bala, then you go back to being the same as Tashmish B'cham. Okay. Now, if it's Tashmish B'cham, which is, you know, in the world of Hagalah,
but wouldn't the cheres to Libun Chamor would also be the possibility of that it can't be kosher? The other option, like we said last week, some cheres can.
As I said, right? Again, sometimes Libun Chamor, the prescription is Libun Chamor, some things will lend themselves to Libun Chamor because they're going to break. Okay, so then if you don't kosher, you don't kosher. Now, one issue that the Shulchan Aruch raises that we had not stressed. Didn't come up in the Gemaras as much, and this is an important issue, that you need to clean things before you kosher them. You have to remove, by Tosas already say, you have to remove rust, you have to remove gook, and you have to clean the surfaces. The surfaces have to be clean before you can kosher. And the Shulchan Aruch goes on to point out in Tafnun Aleph Sif Yud Gimel, the quote from the Chachmei Ashkenaz, sometimes kelim don't lend themselves to cleaning well, either because in Sif Yud Ches, they say if you have a sifter, something with very small holes, that's often going to be very difficult to really clean thoroughly. Always be more grooves and more spaces where, again, talking in the chametz context, where there may be flour stuck. So if it's not cleanable, you're not going to be able to do hagala. Or if you gimel, a different situation is if you have a patched kli. Doesn't come up for us quite as much because we live in a more disposable society. If you have a pot and our pots are very durable. Can imagine a pot developed a hole, we would probably throw it out and buy a new one. But kufasam, pots probably wore out more, and they were less affluent. The pot got a hole, you fixed it. You patched it, which is great, until Pesach comes. Because you have a talai, Shulchan Aruch says, Sif Yud Gimel, so often we're not convinced, it's similar to the sifter. There are too many grooves, there are too many, and there often may even be like, we're not sure. A surgeon would certainly be exquisitely sensitive to before you close anything up, you make sure that everything, you get things super, super clean before you close anything up. But the blacksmith who patches the pot, there may have been some gook that's stuck inside, and then there are grooves and there's irregularities. So we're not sure that it can be cleaned. So if it's cleanable, if you can't clean it, you may not be able to kosher at all, or there's another option, which we'll come back to in a moment. As you see, following along in the flowchart, if it is cleanable, it's something that calls for hagala, because it's not cheres, and it's either tashmisha b'chaman or tashmisha b'or with heter b'ala, so you need hagala. So for hagala, it needs to be cleanable. Again, we didn't ask the question of cleanable for libun, because if you're doing libun, you don't need to clean anything. Libun will destroy everything. But you do an hagala, you need to be able to clean it. If you can clean it, so then the question is, okay, at what stage did the bliya occur? Kli rishon, kli sheni, and so forth, and that's where kibolo kachpoto comes into play. And if it was a bliya, was as often as a kli rishon al gabi ha'esh, then you need hagala, but kli rishon al gabi ha'esh. Two other cases that require, if it's less than less, if it only became God blias through Irui. So strictly speaking, you're only going to need to do Hagala using Irui. for instance, what's the most common example of that for us? Is a sink. A sink never... I assume no one here has a sink that allows... No one here has the option of lighting a fire underneath your sink. So anything that's in your sink is only hot because it flowed out of the... either because you poured it from a pot or because it came out of the faucet. So the sink itself, the walls of the sink, the tub of the sink, only was bolea, fleshik, milchik, treif, chametz, through iroi. So all you need to do is iroi. You're just going to boil up pots, or you're going to boil up kettles, and you're going to pour. You don't need to immerse the sink in the kli rishon. Unlike the sugya on avodah zarah and vav, the yor gadol b'sarach yor k'tam b'sarach yor gadol, and so it's over there. You needed hagala b'kli rishon. The shulchan aruch quotes from the Rif and the Rambam, and if there was bli only b'kli sheni, so then you always strictly speaking need to do hagala b'kli sheni. The Magen Avraham thinks wants to limit that. Not all poskim are agree. Magar says, look, the Ramah holds there is no bli b'kli sheni. We discussed this in Basav Chalav. Big machlokes we showed him kli sheni and mevashel. Does that mean a kli sheni and mavliya? So the Magen Avraham thinks that maybe we just mean irud. You put it in the kli sheni and you pour it onto it. That's what we mean. Others disagree with the Magen Avraham and say, no. It's true that we won't make anything treif based on bli b'kli sheni, but if you have the, that's b'dieved, but if you have the kli that you could kasher, so then not cheres. You have a metal kli, you could kasher it. So then maybe we would say, that's a lechatchila, it was bole b'kli sheni, so kasher it. Kasher it, you can kasher it in a kli sheni. So I have a soup spoon, let's say. If I'm convinced that I never poured from the pot directly onto the spoon, I just put the spoon in the bowl after the soup had landed in the bowl, so then that's maximum bli b'kli sheni. So strictly speaking, you could do haga'ala b'kli sheni. And as I noted on the bottom, sorry, the copy got a little cut off, in all these cases of haga'ala, you need to ask yourself, and how I'm making sure that I'm not recycling. If heter bala is fine, if it's isur bala, they either need me'es leis, 24-hour weight, or I need shishim, the water against the kli, or b'shas ha'tchak, I can rely on the mayim pegumim. The kashering water will have a pole game added to it. And then the two last footnotes. Number one, I'm sorry, I really did not make it onto the flow chart, is in addition to asking is it cleanable, you have to ask is it kasherable. If it's not dishwasher safe, so then I cannot do hagala. Or if it's not cleanable. So what do? If the kli is not cleanable, so it does not lend itself to hagala, or if it's just too big. If it's big, so something that can fit in one side, fit in the other side, and this is not tevila. Hagala is a physical process. As I can do hagala piece by piece, as long as ultimately every part of the kli gets covered. What if you have like a really shulchan they discuss? I have a really long tray. I have no pot that's even half as deep as the tray is long. So I can stick in this side, I can stick in that side. There's no way to get in the middle into the pot. So that the middle of the kli is not kasherable. Or if the kli is not kasherable, because it's not cleanable. Because it's got too many grooves and too many holes. So there is an alternative. Or I just want to save energy. Sustainable hagala. Hagala is such an inefficient process, right? Think about all the energy that you're using to boil up water just to kash the one spoon. Such an inefficient process. So there is an alternative to Hagala. We showed him the following idea, and with this we close. It's called Libun Kal. Balitosas, Rama quotes in Balitosas that full Libun, the Gemara said in Vavam and Aleph, full Libun, that's really, really, really Hashet, Tashet, Klipasin, hot enough, like there's a layer of the metal that's coming off, talking like 800-900 degrees. Self-clean oven. A classical self-clean oven, not an aqualift. That's Libun. To raise it to... Rav Moshe Feinstein has a cooler that you can... If your oven only goes until 450, you can say Kabol Kachpolto and run it at 450 or run at 550, whatever the maximum temperature is, for long enough, and that'll be a me'en liba. But what the post can do right is that to raise it to a much lower temperature, not the libun temperature, not the temperature of libun chamer, which is classic libun, but they saw a light libun, libun kal, hot enough that kash nisraf, that straw would light from it, or paper would light from it, which I think is Fahrenheit 454, I think is the temperature at which paper combusts. So if you raise a kli to that lower temperature, that's the equivalent of Hagalah. It wouldn't work in a case where you need Libun. But Libun Kal could serve as an alternative to Hagalah. So if I have, let's say, that long tray, as I said in Shulchan Aruch, this long, long tray that doesn't fit, that is in Sif Yud Aleph. If it's Aruka, a very long pan, so I put this side, I put it on that side, it's so long I can't, and then in the middle, I do Libun on the middle. What type of Libun? So the Rama says, Libun kol duhu, the kash nisraf lo mimachutz sagile. Enough that it would this Libun kal, that would light straw on fire. And that Libun kal is also the solution in other cases. In a case where it doesn't lend itself to kashrin, I can do Libun kal. Libun kal is the alternative that saves the day.
Arye asked about steaming. Why couldn't steaming have been an option for the middle?
Oh, that's interesting.
The post and the zoom.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the truth is, the steaming is. So steam is one of the open issues. Just like we said, one of the open issues is kashering with some other fluid is an open question. Kashering with steam is a machlokas contemporary poskim, whether that's the same as kashering with hot water or not. So I think many assume, and Rav Neuberger is among them, assume that you can use steam, at least in some contexts. The question is, to use steam for a counter, maybe very different than using steam for this machamas. You use steam for the counter, so to begin with, it's not clear how much kashering the counter needs. Because it's only lahachmir in case something spilled over on that spot. If something spilled over on the spot, that really only may be, what's it called? That may be Iwer Kli Rishon.
And if I thought of a sink, you could use the...
sink also really only is a... was only an Iwer situation. But I'm not sure that's as clear, even those rely on steam. Steam may be the equivalent of Iroi. That's what it is. I have the pot here and then the steam's coming out. The question is, would steam be the equivalent of Hagala Bikli Rishon? Right? I have this pan that they talk about here. So this was a Kli Rishon Mash. I made food in the pan. So I read Hagala Bikli Rishon. So alternative could be Libun Kal. But to do steam, I think that's... those who don't accept Kashrin with steam say steam is not the same as water. Okay. There's your right. See that? That's why we didn't give the solution. Those who do accept steam, I think it would say steam works as an equivalent of Eroi, but steam might not work as equivalent of Hagala Bikli Rishon. And we'll end with one very, very practical point that is also in this Sif Yud Aleph, and that is the status of a pan. So what the question of is a pan tashmisha b'chamin or tashmisha b'ur? Can you do hagalah on a pan or not? So the post can point out, as that's the way it shakes out for most rishon. Some rishon talk about you need to do libun. Others say you need to do hagalah. Once you look at it, it becomes clear that many of them are not disagreeing. Often it becomes a question of how much liquor was in the pan. Hagalah, many assume that hagalah on a pan is fine if you use the pan you fried in a layer of liquid. If you were frying in deep frying in a layer of oil, So that's the tashmish of b'chamin. But if you were pan frying, you know, you just use a little bit of Pam to coat it. But if you pour a drop of oil in, it was basically dry. Then al pi pashtas, the same way you showed it right there. If you baked in the pan, you need to do libun. Al pi pashtas, if you use spray in a pan, you're going to need to do libun. If you're deep frying, so then hagala suffices. But if it's almost dry, al pi pashtas, you need to do libun. Hagala does not suffice. And again, that's not libun kal. That's a real need. That's tashmisho ba'ur. If I have a par of a pan and I accidentally used it for salami and eggs and made it fleishik, or I accidentally used it for eggs and cheese and I made the par of a pan milchik, so that's a terabala. So that's the sugya avodah zarah involved in alav. Because in taste, I do hagala on the pan, like a shput v'yaskala. But that's not the usual shayla. The usual shayla is not that my power of a pan became milchik or fleishik. The usual shayla is that my milchik pan became fleishik and therefore treif, or vice versa. So frying in a pan, both for the pan and, it should be noted, also for whatever you put in the pan, the kelim used in the pan, that's usually going to be, if you don't have a layer of liquid, that's going to be a tashmisha b'or situation. That would require libun. And that takes us back to buchya. Is your pan going to survive libun? And in theory, if you put it in the self clean oven and lock the door, so then that's like chazar l'kivshonos. There's no way to get it out. I'm not worried about. There's no way to be chayis because it's locked in. But you may have a big mess to clean up in your oven. So when you're dealing with frying. Dry frying or baking, that is tashmish b'or, and that's going to require, typically will require libun, unless
it's air fryer is worse than a deep fryer.
Air fryer. Yeah, correct. An air fryer is worse than a deep fryer, that's right.
In this regard, right. If you have to do libun for the air fryer, potentially a deep fryer, you could do hagala.
Right. And the question is going to be, as with Rav Moshe, would you apply Rav Moshe's kula? That maybe I could just turn it up to the turn up to the highest. Now again, it's not clear that you can apply Rav Moshe's kula because Rav Moshe's kula was in an oven, whereas we've explored in Hilchos Basar B'chol. To begin with, it's not clear how much oven needs kashering because you don't have contact between the food and the oven walls. It's a question of the limited amount of steam.
The
air fryer, though, I assume you have the food is sitting on a rack. So there, that's clearly a blia. There's a clear need for kashering, and that's tashmisho b'ur. So to say that there, I say, just turn up to the highest, even though it's nowhere near 800 degrees, that's more of a jump than Rav Moshe made with the ovens.
Is Rav Moshe just saying it because we can actually know that the hottest the temperature could get? Like, you know that the oven can't get hotter than this
correct. So
the way the ovens are made, and therefore that is why if Kagol Pakach Polto, that's why that should be perfectly fine based on all the hot, maskanas of.
Yeah, so that was one of the other open issues.
Versus the ovens of the Mishnah and Gemara was just lighting some sort of coal underneath of a fire oven, and it's kind of like you don't know what the temperature is.
Right, it's not, right. So that's one of the other open issues. Is that we're generally machmer on, except perhaps in Shas Hatzchak, it's Kabbal Kapot allows me to choose Hagala versus Libra. Kabbal Kapot allows me to choose Klirishon, Iroi, Klisheni, maybe also Klirishon, Agavish, Logavish. But how about the other details, like temperature? So that we said is an open question. Do we require Mala Resicha because 212 or 190? Because we're not sure how high it went, so misafek say, 212, or no, that's what hagala always means. And even if you know that your pot was never used above 170, hagala means ma'ala resicha. That's an open question. We're generally, that's what they discuss a lot in the OU Tshuvas, because it sometimes comes, again, usually it's irrelevant, because usually I can't know. I don't know how hot my pot got. If it's an industrial context, you're more likely to have equipment that runs at a particular temperature. Or if you have specialized equipment at home, an oven or sous vide equipment or something like that, or maybe an air fryer. Now, here's the wrinkle. Even if you're going to be makel to say kabbal kapolta to that layer of level of granularity, that I know it never went over 165 degrees, I just have to kasher 170. Even if you're going to say that like sort of third level granularity of kabbal kapol, not just hagala versus liban or klirishin versus klisheni, but even 160 versus 180, that might still only be true by hagala, but not necessarily by liban. Because again, this is where for the first time the fact that hagala is an extractive process and liban is a destructive process, it's now a chumra on the liban side. Because the idea of saying kabbal kapol, so yeah, if it only went in at 160 degrees, maybe 170 will get it out. But if liban is destructive, then it's very hard to say, well, it only went in at 550. It went in at 550, so what? If you're trying to destroy I need a certain temperature, absolute temperature, to destroy. So Rav Moshe is mekel, l'tzorech. He says, if you don't have a choice, he's willing to mekel. But again, he's mekel by an oven where the need for kashering is not as absolute. But in a situation where...
Because it's not touching the food.
Because it's not touching the food. And you don't have a... This is not a pot. This is not a closed pot with a lid where there's like thick steam.
It's because of Zeya.
Right. Zeya, it's not Hevel. But if you're dealing with direct contact with food, so then to apply that kula not only to Hagala but to Libun...
It creates on your barbecue would be more of a problem.
Yeah.
If you touch the food.
Even, right, even though I know... that my barbecue doesn't run beyond 650, you probably would not suffice to run at 650. Correct. Okay.
And last thing you should look at would be glass, because that's the makokas.
Yeah. That's right.
Needs kosherable or doesn't need
kosherable. Yeah, so I'll be fine. So again, so Sfaradim, the Shulchan Aruch assumes that the glass does not need koshering. And the Ramah assumes that at least l'chatchila we do treat glass as something that is like charis. The Ramah does say most Rishonim are mekel, and again we said it's a three of machlokas, and most Rishonim assume that it's even more kal, that it doesn't even need kashering. So in a bidyevet situation, sometimes we're willing to be mekel. But l'chatchila, we would treat glass as something that needs and cannot take kasher. Correct. Hechsher kalim is a very broad, as we saw, so in many ways a very the way the sugya is set up. So a lot of different pieces, a lot of different places. I hope that, I think we succeeded in covering a lot of the key issues conceptually and how they play out halacha l'maisa. And I hope the whole chart also helps bring everything together. Thank you so much.